Today's program was brought to you by the Wisconsin Cheese Cupid Pairing App, available on Android and Apple devices.
This is Michael Harlan Turkel, host of The Food Scene. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to Love Bites, where dining and dating collide, coming at you live from Heritage Radio Network. Today is Monday, January 11th, 2016. I'm one of your hosts, Jacqueline Raposo. I write about people who make food. You can find my work and me as wordsfoodart.com. I'm 34, straight, and single.
And I am your other host, Ben Rosenblatt. I am an actor, writer, musician, occasionally a bartender and server. You can check me out at benrosenblattactor.com. I am 33, straight, and also single.
Today's show is going to be quite interesting for many reasons. First off, if my voice sounds a little funny, it's because I'm not in the studio.
No.
I'm calling in from our nation's capital, where I'm staying with a very dear friend of Ben's and mine for a little bit.
I miss you so much, Jacqueline. I miss your warm, loving energy staring across from me in the room here.
I miss you, too. I feel so sad and disconnected, but at least, you know, I'm unshowered, and I'm in sweatpants, and I'm drinking coffee.
That
so
does not sound
not
more
so
appealing to me. That
end.
Sounds great for you. I'm occupied. I'm keeping the captain's chair warm for you, if that
you
makes
feel
you
feel... very powerful right now.
I feel like a god.
Oh, good.
But
I hope you feel like a god, because this is a very interesting show. The show is all about you today, Ben.
Oh, dear Lord.
Ben is going to spend the majority of the show exploring our Why We Didn't Work experiment. He's asked a few of his exes a series of questions about their past relationship that he, in turn, has answered. Therapist Vienna Farron of Mindful Marriage and Family Therapy in New York City is there to discuss the patterns in those relationships he might not be aware of and how he might alter some of them in the future.
But before we get to that, Jacqueline, what happened with the asshole who we talked about from OKCupid last week who was sending you abusive messages?
Yeah, so if you guys listened to the show last week, at the end of the show, we had a pretty great conversation about the violence some women receive online that came up after a guy in OKCupid ended a messaging sequence to me with, "I hope this woman gets brutally raped and treated like the bitch that she is."
God
which
damn
shocked,
it.
Which, I know, it's still on my end, it's not that shocking that happened.
It's baffling to me.
Yeah, so it was a great conversation last week. So before that show, I had already reported that message for harassment on OKCupid, which you can do directly on the message itself, but I heard nothing. So after last week's show, I reported it again as offensive, and again, I heard nothing. But a few days later, I saw that his profile had been deactivated. I had no idea if he deleted it or disabled it or if he'd been kicked off, and I'd heard nothing from OKCupid. So the past couple days, I sort of had the sequence back and forth of finding out how to email them on the site, and then once I did, not really getting an answer other than eventually them saying, "Polyrock has been banned from the site." That was the guy's username, Polyrock.
So I knew
that he had been banned, but I didn't get anything more specific from my interchange with them.
How does that make you feel about OKCupid, about the world in general, about, like, is there a way in your mind that OKCupid could have handled it better, do you think?
The only thing that, as far as how I feel about online dating, you always take a risk when you meet people online. When you post something on the internet, there's always a risk that you're going to get something bad back. That's just being the, you know, that's just the internet. That's us dating on the internet. So I don't blame OKCupid for that by any means. And I did eventually ask their press department for a statement about this, and I got a statement from Alice Hunsberger, who is the director of customer support. That I'm just going to read the whole thing. It's pretty short. "We don't give any specifics to someone who was banned, as we don't want them to retaliate against the person who reported them. Too many details would let them know who reported them to us. When someone who was banned tries to log in, they'll see a message letting them know that they violated our terms of service. If they email us and ask for a reason, the most we'd say is something general, like, 'We received a report about your account and found your messages to be harassing or sexually aggressive, and they violated our terms of service. So basically, they cover their own asses, which is fair. The person does get removed. They had even told me that a lot of times they have moderators and algorithms that already can find questionable profiles before most people even report them. So it's not a safety issue to me. It's more just that I would have hoped there was a protocol in line for when you report someone that you find out what happens. Because if I hadn't sort of gone through the hoops of finding out, oh, I have to go to the about page, then the support page, and then I have to click on, you know, I have to report it as a complaint. I can't report the guy directly to somebody other than on his profile. I have to sort of make a complaint, and then I have to have a back and forth. I had to jump through hoops to find out. And I just think that maybe if you're going to be an online community, especially one where, you know, there's millions of people meeting, maybe there should be a protocol in place that if you report somebody, at least you know that your report was recognized, that it's being looked into, and then you have somebody you can go to directly to say, did something happen, or is this person still out there? That's all I would say that I would think could maybe be stronger.
This is to, like, help make you feel safer and, like, that your voice is being heard.
Well, just that something happens, because if I hadn't gone through the hoops, I have no assurance that anything even happened, that report went anywhere. So that's the only thing I'd say. Just a communication could be a little bit better on that side. But who knows? But I don't feel unsafe on the site, and I don't rag on OkCupid for it. I still think it's still my favorite dating site. So,
sure. Well, it's nice to know that he's been eliminated. And
yeah, he was an asshole. There's, you know,
oh,
whatever.
Oh, my God. Beyond.
Yeah. Yeah, so I guess that's fair. So that was that. But I'm more excited to get to the meat of our show today, Benjamin. So for the rest of the show, I'm just going to hang on the line, but just sort of listen to you. So, Ben, why don't you introduce Vienna more fully, and Godspeed.
Oh, God, I'm going to need that. Thank you. I am both very thrilled and slightly terrified to welcome to the show Vienna Farron, who is the founder of Mindful Marriage and Family Therapy here in New York City, where she's also a therapist. She leads retreats for both singles and couples, is the relationship expert for the website Motherly. She founded Mind Sweat, a combination of intensive physical activity followed directly by therapy. And if that's not enough, she also leads workshops and conferences all over the country. You can find her on Instagram and Twitter as MindfulMFT, and on Facebook as MindfulnessMFT, and also on the web at NewYorkCouplesCounseling.com. Welcome to the show, Vienna.
Thank you, Ben. Thanks for having me.
It's my pleasure. So, as we discussed previously on the show, Jacqueline and I, we are engaged in this experiment about what went wrong in our previous relationships. And there are five questions that we sent to each of the exes that we found most significant enough to answer these questions. I'll refer to mine as relationship number one and relationship number two chronologically so that we can respect their privacy. And the questions I asked were: what worked about us? What didn't work about us? Why did we break up? Do you have any regrets? And what do you think of when you think of me now? And Vienna, I shared these answers with you as well as my answers to the questions. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious, just off the bat, if there's anything up front right away that kind of jumped out at you about these one or both of these relationships that, like, sticks out of you as, like, this is where things took a turn for the worse or went wrong.
Yeah, I mean, first, I have to say, this is such a cool experiment, right? Once you sent those questions over, I was like, I should do this. You know, like, everybody should have to do this
everyone,
and really think about those relationships.
Everyone wants to, I think. I'm just lucky to have a radio show where I get an excuse.
Right,
to
exactly.
Be like, hey,
right. You don't have to be that person.
Exactly. It's like, for my radio show.
Right,
it's
exactly.
For my radio show.
Yeah, I mean, I think part of it is that, like, you get to go back and explore and be really thoughtful. And in that process, I imagine, I'm outside of what you and I have spoken about, just the process of going back there, I'm sure you learned something new about yourself, just even considering those questions. But there were a lot of things that stood out. I think there's a huge discrepancy between the two relationships. I know you said relationship number one, relationship number two, and maybe part of it is about your age and how you had grown personally also. But the first relationship, really, it was fun. I mean, there were a lot of nice things that you both could say about each other, but it sort of ended there. You know, it wasn't like, I didn't gather that either one of you really felt like you were able to have a tremendous amount of growth with each other in that space. And in the second relationship, it really felt like it was a super transformative one for both of you. Obviously, they both ended, but there was still a tremendous amount of transformation in that space. I found that both of you had a greater fondness for each other in the second relationship.
Yeah.
You would agree.
I would agree.
I mean, and again, the part of that too, I would imagine the previous relationship being a bit younger and maybe less emotionally wise in that space, but.
And ended a little like a bit more messier, I think.
Sure.
And also just having space, more space. I mean, this was like a decade ago now too.
Right.
So.
Right, absolutely, yeah. I do think, however, one of the things that stood out is you've been, and Ben and I, to the listeners, have also spoken quite a bit about the relationships and understanding further dynamics, and it has always felt like, from what he has shared with me, that if they always felt like safe and secure relationships where both of them could openly express what they needed from each other, how they were feeling, and all of that sounds beautiful. I mean, that's exactly what we want. But as I was reading some of the answers, it still seemed like there was still space that was filled with insecurity and doubts around sharing certain things that were painful. Maybe more for the women than you, Ben.
I think both. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, the most deepest, like, parts and like the most deepest things that are struggles within the relationship are always difficult for me to share.
Sure.
Because they feel personal and potentially really hurtful.
Right.
Sometimes, and I don't want to be hurtful.
Right. And so we're preserving how other people feel, right? But in that space, also not always honoring ourselves. We don't want to be jerks to people, and especially somebody that you care for deeply, right? Like, these are, at the time, were women that I imagine you loved or had love for. I think both relationships were pretty long, right?
The first run was 4 years,
yeah,
all told, and the second one was about a year.
Okay, yeah. I mean, so significant amounts of your life, right?
Yeah.
And again, I sort of step away from how long relationships go and tend to focus more on how transformative they are. But that aside, like when we're trying to preserve the feelings of others, which we can be thoughtful in our words and how we communicate how we're feeling. But when we are too protective of it, we wind up stepping away from what's going on with us, right?
Yeah.
So in that space, we're not actually honoring how we're feeling, or we're not actually being as honest. And I know that's a word that you used with me before, like, it is so important for you to be super honest and sometimes to a fault, but yet there is still certain areas where that honesty, like the fear of hurting somebody else, is getting in the way of you really sharing everything that's going on for you.
And so I said, it was clear to you in both the answers in both relationships that,
yeah,
it felt to me as though these relationships were safe spaces where we could talk about anything.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, of course, to some degree, they weren't. And I'm curious as to, like, why is it that I feel like I'm providing this space, but I'm actually not? What is in that dynamic of, like, here I am, I think I'm creating this safe space. What is in my way from actually creating that space?
Yeah, I mean, somewhere, and maybe I'll put the question back on you in some way here, that, like, what was the narrative around what it means to create a safe space and environment within a relationship? Like, you're a very vulnerable and open guy who has a lot of great insight about himself. And so I'm sure that you've thought about certain parts of this, but, like, what do you subscribe to? Like, what creates safety and security within a relationship? Because that's what you're setting for yourself and that person.
Yeah, I think expressing, for me, it's, mm-hmm, expressing empathy and expressing the idea that whatever is said isn't going to scare me away,
mm-hmm,
or will not crush me to a degree that is irreparable.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, and being vocal about it.
Mm-hmm.
I think I am typically vocal about anything that's, I would rather have you talk to me. I think in one of the relationships, relationship two, there was, mm-hmm, a time where, I don't know, I find my defenses in some ways coming up to a lot of the things, mm-hmm, that you say, because, mm-hmm, either don't think they're true or I'm not ready to face them yet.
Sure.
But I mean, I remember a specific moment in that relationship where, I mean, here's the anecdote is we were walking down the street. I was spending time with, my girlfriend and her sister. Mm-hmm. And I made some sort of joke toward the sister about how she must like me better than all of her other sister's previous mm-hmm. boyfriends. And it, to me, it was a total like offhanded joke to kind of like, I don't know, be charming in some way. And I thought it was fine and we all kind of had a laugh about it. But later, the girlfriend expressed to me that she felt like I put her sister in an uncomfortable position. Mm-hmm. And so anyway, we talked about it. And I really felt like I listened and heard her and mm-hmm. understood what she was saying. I expressed what I felt about the situation and we moved forward. Mm-hmm. And like, it was a real moment for me, unlike the previous relationship where I felt like that girlfriend used to kind of be very passive aggressive mm-hmm. about like confronting me on certain things. Mm-hmm. Like she, girlfriend number two, really expressed honestly what was up. Mm-hmm. I took it in, really heard it, listened and, you know, apologize to the degree that I felt necessary mm-hmm. and we moved forward. Mm-hmm. And so to me, that was a sign that it was a safe place, but maybe it wasn't. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think too, and just going off of that example, you too did that very, very well, right? Like that was a successful, like, let me bring this up. Let me share how I feel. My partner's going to hear me. He's going to be able to kind of see his role in it. He'll offer some type of empathy in return, and then we'll be able to move forward. And this isn't going to be something that gets in the way. And it's not to... I'm sort of going to sound like I'm ranking things that hurt us and what's an issue and what's not, but there is... I think that there are different levels of that. Like we can say, hey, this bothered me and do it in the moment, which is a beautiful thing. That's actually low negativity threshold is something that I talk about with couples all the time. And we tend to think that having a high negativity threshold, it's sort of this myth that our culture has subscribed to that if we have a high negativity threshold, if we let things kind of slide off our shoulders, we don't nitpick, we don't, you know, choose your battles, right? You've heard that message before. And, that actually does us no good in relationships. The low negativity threshold is that whenever we're feeling something, we're able to share it with our partner, right? And we honor that space, which is exactly what you're describing that you and relationship number two were able to do. But I also wonder if you were able to go even further with it. Like, it's not to say that what she expressed to you in that moment wasn't difficult. It may have been, but there were other things in her responses that she wasn't able to share with
totally.
You. And so that's why I'm saying, you know, am I ranking like how we feel
sure.
about certain things? But there were things in her responses where she was saying, you know, I didn't really feel entirely admired by you or respected by you when it came to acting. And is this okay that I'm
yeah,
sharing?
Of
okay.
Course.
And that also your kind of opinion of or some narrative that you had around gender differences. And she shared that she wasn't able to articulate those things back then, which I think in your response was actually shocking to you because I think you were like, well, wait, if I had known these things, I feel like I could have tended to these, you know, emotional needs that you were having. You were feeling hurt. You weren't feeling admired entirely by me, even though you admired her in so many ways. But she wasn't able to share that with you, whether that was because she couldn't step into that part of her vulnerability or whether she just had blinders on and didn't really understand that is how she was actually feeling back then. It still shows us that even though you thought there was this really safe and secure space for the two of you to really talk about anything you wanted to, you weren't actually talking about the things that were deeply hurting her, right? The things that she says could have potentially axed you for her being your lifelong partner, right?
Yeah, damn. Like
yeah.
that, I mean, that feels shitty mm-hmm. to like... Mm-hmm. feel as though I let that dynamic, that I fostered that dynamic somehow.
Yeah.
And it makes me wonder how, like, what I could have done differently.
Sure.
So anyway, look, let's say that, you know, we could spend a lot of time trying to, like, get to the bottom of, are these mm-hmm. things actually true or not? Because, like I said, my defenses pop up all the time. But let's say, like, you know, after a couple months of therapy, mm-hmm. these walls get beaten down. And mm-hmm. I see this pattern now in myself. I'm ready to address it. Mm-hmm. I think we should take a quick break.
Sure.
And when we come back, we'll discuss when the walls do come down and we're now aware of these patterns, how do we actually address them and make changes? So we're going to take a break. But first, I just want to remind you that you can find all of our shows here at heritageradionetwork.org, as well as on iTunes, where you can drop us a review and subscribe to our show so that it automatically downloads to your devices. And if you want to let us know how we're doing, you can find us on Facebook and Twitter at Love Bites Radio, and find more about us and our guests at lovebitesradio.com. We'll be back after a quick break from our sponsors and from some music from Techstar.
If you're listening to this show, you've probably used Tinder, you've probably used OkCupid, and maybe you're bored of these human dating apps. Want to play matchmaker with some more interesting couples? Food couples? Say, drinks and cheese? Well, you can now with the Wisconsin Cheese Cupid app. What beverage complements your cheese? What cheese complements your beverage? Wisconsin Cheese Cupid has the answer. Just choose beverage or cheese in need of a soulmate, and Wisconsin Cheese Cupid will do the rest. Feeling a bit adventurous? Pairing Roulette will create a random yet perfectly delicious pairing for you. So if you're sick of swiping left and right, put aside the dating struggles and make a match that'll satisfy even the loneliest of the lonely. Go to cheesecupid.com or find Cheese Cupid in the App Store. Happy matchmaking.
And we are back. And we've still got Vienna Farren with us breaking down my entire self-concept. So now that, okay, let's say here I am now like on board with this. I have this pattern of, you know, projecting that I've created this space for openness and vulnerability and mm-hmm. safety for really discussing anything that is on either of our minds within a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, that's not the reality of the space that's been created.
Right.
How do I go about actually making that the reality? How do I uncover what's actually in the way for me and make these changes of behavior?
Sure. I mean, one of the things that I talk a lot about is understanding messages that we've received and how they've turned into our narratives, right? Like the kind of the inner talk that we have with ourselves, right? That we hear over and over and over again. And so my question back to you really is like, what are the narratives around that role, right? Like you're saying, I am a safe place for you, right? I'm making sure that you feel okay. I'm making sure that you're secure in this relationship. And so for me, as a marriage and family therapist, I always go back to family of origin, which I can hear some of the eye rolls that are going on, from the listeners. I'm sure it's so tough for people to accept it. You know, we really push that away sometimes, but really our role within our family systems, those relationships, the dynamics, the messages that we received, whether they're verbal or nonverbal, turn into our narratives and they turn into the way that we feel about ourselves and relationships and how we should show up. And so this is tough because I think, you know, Ben and I have just met and really he should not be entirely vulnerable with me and share this. This is work that tends to happen over a longer period of time where our relationship is safe. So I appreciate you going there and being vulnerable and trying to keep yourself open to this. But when I think about, you know, how I would respond to that question, it's always going to come back to like your role in your family, right? How that shows up for you, how you felt about that role, and then seeing if you do any of that with your romantic relationships. So when you think about some of the stronger roles that you owned within your family system, what stands out to you?
Well, as we discussed a little bit on the phone as we were prepping for the episode, I talked a little bit about my parents' divorce and about the role that I feel like I played in that, which was... essentially, I feel like to make myself invisible and to make sure that I was not another problem that among the many issues and like heart-wrenching, you know, issues that my family members were dealing with in their own lives, in their own relationship and with in regard to how they felt about themselves.
Yeah.
I felt like if I just could... not add to that, that would be the best thing for me to do, or like the responsible thing for me to do was to not make it worse.
Yeah. Kind of preserving.
Yeah.
For other people.
And not making anyone worry about me because I was okay. But even though maybe I probably wasn't
I mean, that,
but, you know, if I projected that, then that would be better for them.
Yeah. So so you took on the role as sort of becoming invisible, not adding to a system that maybe appeared to be pretty messy at the time. I imagine a lot of emotion, a lot of hurt going on. And so you kind of withdraw yourself from that space. And I'm not going to add to a system that's possibly collapsing right now.
Yeah.
Right. And two, I want to do this so that it's safer for the people that I care around me. Right. So if I see my other family members sort of struggling a little bit, let me do this to help you.
Yes, and that too, like if they needed to come talk to me about something, that like if I was a disaster or a mess or had my own issues, that like I wasn't a safe place. So I guess this does kind of ring right into what we're talking about, is that like to me being a safe place is being a, you know, on top of my own shit.
Right.
You know?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Except back then you really weren't on top of your own shit.
Totally.
You know, back then you were not, you were avoiding your stuff. You know, you were putting that off. You were internalizing it. You didn't have a safe place to actually share any of it. Not because it wasn't safe, right? But because you had decided, oh boy, I better not add to this collapsing system, right? Did anybody tell you, you know, Ben, you can't have feelings and, you know, please don't.
No.
You know, please don't break down and cry because your parents are getting divorced. Like, was that ever a message? Right.
No.
So you created
Absolutely
that somewhere
created that.
For yourself.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So when you think about like then how it shows up in your relationships, you go in, you're like, I need to create a safe place. And I hear you kind of changing it a little bit where before it was like, okay, I shouldn't have any needs to... I can have needs and I can share them openly with my partner and my partner can share them openly with me. But that really wasn't the case when we look back to your family role through the divorce.
True. I was minimizing my needs to a great degree.
Right. And so do you feel like you minimized your needs at all within the relationships, or were you like over the top and really like, okay, well, because I did this before, I'm not doing it now.
You know, I honestly kind of feel like it was somewhere in between.
Uh-huh.
Like I definitely do this thing in my life where I minimize my needs in certain relationships, typically in ones where I feel, where I fear rejection or where I fear like that I, where someone has status over me.
Right.
I tend to not need as, try to not need as much from them.
Sure.
But I felt like in, especially in relationship number two, which is kind of the one we've been talking more about, that like we were equals.
Right.
And that I do feel like she made me feel safe, like I could need from her. And yet there were things that I wasn't able to express to her at the same time. So it's confusing.
But you were still protecting her.
Yeah.
Right.
True.
Like there were certain things that she felt, that you felt, that you knew were true. Like now looking back at it, right, some of the things that hurt her were thoughts and feelings that you did have, right? But you didn't share them because you were still protecting her.
Yeah.
You, right? You didn't want, like you said before, when we're coming back to it, right? You said, like, I don't want to be the jerk that's saying something to somebody that I really deeply care about. So I'm not voicing it. But yet that person's, of course, going to pick up on it. right? She didn't feel entirely admired by you. She didn't feel respected by you. And there wasn't a safe space for that to be communicated because you didn't share it. You internalized it, which made her have to.
So how do I address this?
Right. So, I mean, I think part of it, obviously, going to therapy or having conversations with people that challenge you and shed light on your blind spots is incredibly important. These fears will run your life. You know, like if we don't address them, the fears will run the ship. That's why we wind up, you know, when people say like, oh, we date the same types of people over and over and over again. And it's like, well, yeah, like if your fears are the same fears or if your pain isn't getting wiser, then you're going to keep choosing the same people who are going to reveal, you know, your old hurt. You know what I mean? So like this is, you have to look at yourself. You really have to go inside to understand what your constraints are. Like what's keeping me from doing X, right? Like what's keeping me from being able to say these things to my partner? Like why do I not want to? And where have I seen that before? There's information there. Like we don't just do things to do them, right? We do them for a reason. We're protecting ourselves, we're protecting others, but generally we're protecting ourselves somehow, right? Because if you're super honest with her and then it really hurts her and then she leaves you because of it, ugh.
Yeah.
That's pretty awful.
It's awful. It's the worst.
Yeah, it's the worst.
It's the worst imaginable outcome.
Yes. Yes. And I'm sorry, but when it comes to romantic relationships, there is some status there. Somebody can leave at any point, right? So when we say like, oh, well, we felt like equals, that is true. That's beautiful. It's wonderful. But there's still that choice that's there. And there's a fear if I am completely honest in this space, could this person leave me?
Yeah. So is your advice that 100, like I am a huge, huge believer in honesty and complete honesty. It's a very, very important quality to me, important characteristic of myself in me. Mm-hmm. And yet clearly I'm not capable of it all the time.
Sure.
But is that the route to go, to always be 100% honest, even if it's hurtful?
Look, I think part of it right now is that we can only go as far as what we know, right? So it, like what our own self-awareness is all that we can really give to other people. That's why when we look back at relationships and why this experiment is so cool is that like you can see much further, right? 5 years later, if you've done some work on yourself, you're going to see certain things that you did in the relationship that you would have done differently. Or you'd say, okay, I would have shared this a little bit differently, or I would have opened up more, or I wouldn't have, kept myself from setting this boundary with this person. But when it comes to like, how honest do we want to be? I mean, I think we're not here to like hurt each other. You know, like we're not here to say nasty things, and cut each other down, but being able to own ourselves is so important. And so when it comes to honesty, like, yeah, we do need to be honest. And it's the way in which we share that information with a person that can either, it just changes the trajectory of it, right? Like where the direction of the conversation is going, right? Like you can give difficult information to somebody, but it's the way that we do it that's going to change the outcome, right? Do you want me to go through, like, I mean, if we're using statements, if we're owning ourselves as opposed to kind of pointing the finger at somebody else and saying, well, you make me feel this way, right? Like if we're just able to say, you know, I hurt when, you know, XYZ happens, you know, like that shifts it right away. Like we don't want people to be defensive in that space. And the second we say you, they're going to be, right? Those walls come shooting up. They hear some message that says you've done something wrong, you've let me down, and they're going to shut down to that. The way that we start conversations is often the way that they end. So if we have a soft startup, John Gottman is a relationship researcher out in Seattle, and he talks about soft startups and how powerful they are, that we're like really gentle with each other instead of a harsh startup where we're coming at the person and sort of attacking them. I mean, I could go on and on, but I'm not sure that this is the direction of, you know, where you want to go right now.
Unfortunately, we are actually running out of time.
Okay.
Our shows fly by, and I'm loving every second of information that you are parsing to me.
Great.
But we do, unfortunately, need to wrap it up.
Okay.
We could spend eons picking apart my neuroses, which clearly there's no shortage of. But we are out of time. Jacqueline, are you still there?
I'm still here. I've been hanging on to your every word, both of you.
Oh God, well, I miss you even more now that, you know, my whole ego has been shattered into a million pieces. But before we end the show, I'm just wondering if you have any takeaways from what you just heard of this conversation.
Well, I have a billion takeaways. I was pretty much typing notes the entire time. Being a writer, that's obviously what I do a lot. But I just want to fluff your ego a little bit more, my darling, because as somebody who's known you for the past 15 years and has known especially your statement of I don't want to hurt people, and I know your past and how you've seen other loved ones in your life and your life be hurt, I just want to commend you because you've already come in the 15 years I know you so far, and for me as your friend, you've created a very safe space, and safer as the years go on, for me to share with you the most personal, the most intimate, the most scary parts of my life. And I really do believe that you have that capacity in you for a future romantic relationship, especially considering how much you know now that you didn't know for these past relationships that you referred to today. So I'm very proud of you, and I have nothing but confidence that you're only going to keep creating safer and safer spaces for you and those in your life.
Thank you for that.
Yeah. And the end of your conversation is actually a great transition into our show for next week, because next week we will be joined by therapist Diana Gasparoni, who's the founder of Be Her, a group of female-focused therapists and life coaches in New York City. And she's going to walk me through the correspondence between me and four of my former gentlemen. And our conversation primarily is going to be on communication and how that changes from, you know, guys that I broke up with 5, 6, 7 years ago to 2 years ago, how the conversation, the narrative changes, and what you choose to tell somebody now that you might not have a few years ago while you were going through the breakup. So that will be our conversation next week. Thank you so much for coming on the show, Vienna. I really appreciate you.
You
for
are
being
amazing.
There.
I'm blown
and
away by your
incredible,
insight.
Incredible show today. So
awesome.
Thank you both.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I wish you were here so we could have met.
I know. One day it will happen. Down the line, we'll definitely have you back when I will have my butt back in my chair, Benjamin.
Never. It's mine forever.
But until then, that was our show for today. Thank you all so much for listening once again. Our engineer was the ever amazing Liz Smith. Thanks to our sponsor, the Wisconsin Cheese Cupid. Thanks to Vienna Farron for a really fascinating show. Our theme song is You Better You Bet by Robbie Gill. And we are Jacqueline Raposo and Ben Rosenblatt. We'll be back at the same time next week right here at heritageradionetwork.org.
See ya.
This program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.